This week on the Design Review, we discuss the principles of no UI and whether or not the best interface really is no interface.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us again for another episode of Design Review. We're excited to discuss a topic that's been really hot this week, really highly debated.
Yeah.
And Chris has really been showed it to me, and we started talking about it, and we decided, hey, we got to do a show about that.
Yeah. Because we ended up like chatting about it online for a little bit, and then we're like, this is all really good stuff. We should do a podcast.
That's pretty much how the podcast started, actually. I was actually explaining this to someone yesterday, and they're like, how did it start? And I was like, actually, it was just, we ended up talking so much about like design stuff that we're like, why don't we just record this? And that's good. That's a show. So, yeah.
So now everyone else gets to benefit.
Yeah. That's remained to be seen. Oh, we have a couple of good reviews. That's good. Yeah. So the topic we're talking about this week is no UI. This was a post from a man named Golden Krishna.
Yeah. That's an awesome name, by the way.
Who's a designer at Google, and he wrote a short essay and also a book on the topic. And he admits that it was inspired by, you know, previous predecessors and inspirations like pioneers like Don Norman and Mark Weiser from Xerox PARC.
Yeah, so we'll have a link to the article. It's very interesting. If you haven't read it, it's titled The Best Interface is No Interface. It's totally worth a read if you have not read it. But we will first summarize what the article is about.
Yeah, so you don't actually have to read the article or the book. You're going to get it all here. Yeah, in this short segment. So yeah, what is it?
Yeah.
I think you do a pretty good job at summing it up.
Yeah. In essence, you know, just given the relatively recent popularity of all of our cool devices that we have, you know, smartphones and tablets and I don't know, whatever other cool stuff, we are basically just like inundated with screens all around us. I don't know about you, but I have like actually like four.
Yeah, it's like up to our neck right now. Screens everywhere.
Yeah, I have like four screens in front of me right now. Anyways, so for a lot of our waking life, we are just basically constantly in the presence of screens, and along with them are all these various interfaces that we interact with. From, you know, going from our phones in the morning to our computers during the day and, you know, watching television at night and all this other stuff. What it's done is basically for everything you need to coin Apple's slogan is there's basically an app for everything. There's an app for that, right?
So whether it needs an app or not, which is sort of the argument.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, right? So,
well, I mean, I guess not that there's an app, but there's an interface that you have to interact with.
Right.
In order to accomplish those things.
Right.
Yeah, like, I think that's really the core of the argument is that there's this huge trend because you know, we've been so inundated with the screens that it's sort of become our way of thinking about things, of how to solve things and how to provide solutions and value to people is you bring up an interface in front of them, have them learn and interact it with it, and then that's how they, you know, use your service or get a value from your service.
Right.
So I kind of liked how he started out his article. He said, you know, there's like this huge trend right now. Like, oh, there's a car dashboard. How are we going to update that? Slap an interface on it. Refrigerator. You know, how can we make the refrigerator, you know, the 21st century? Slap an interface on it. Oh, there's a hotel lobby. That's a nice hotel lobby you got there. Slap an interface on it. Oh, you got a nice watch. Is that a nice luxury watch? We're going to throw an interface on top of that.
Right.
Golf cart, interface.
Yeah.
Virtual reality. You know, anything's possible. You have a whole new world to work with. You know, you make the whole universe as a screen. Slap an interface on that too.
Right. Yeah. So this is really the sentiment that this whole no UI thing is trying to combat. Is like we are just full of, you know, graphical user interfaces, and the article basically questions why. Why do we need it? And how do we actually go about designing for something that doesn't rely on an interface? And so he laid out three overarching kind of principles to this. And we'll get into those right now.
Instant satisfaction.
So the first principle, he writes about it and he says, eliminate interfaces to embrace natural processes. And so this is basically just about getting us as designers and technologists and developers and whatever to start embracing what comes naturally to humans and human behavior rather than always just, you know, slapping an interface on it, right? And regardless of how simple your interface is, you know, maybe there's a better way to go about it. Well, so he uses an example to explain how this works today where, you know, if you have an app like Google Wallet or something where you're paying for things. Well, Google Wallet, it doesn't exist anymore, right? Anyway, so he goes through this example of somebody ordering a sandwich. So step one, it says, you know, the shopper enters a store. Two, they order a sandwich. Three, takes a smartphone out of his pocket. Four, turns his phone on. Five, has to slide to unlock. Six, enter the passcode. Seven, swipes through all the icons that they have to find the Google Wallet app. Eight, it taps the icon. Nine, waits for the app to load. 10, looks at the app and tries to figure out, you know, or remember how the app works. 11, makes a best guess at which menu item to hit to get the credit cards working. 12, he has to swipe to find the credit card that he would like to use. Step 13, he taps the desired credit card. Step 14, he has to find the NFC receiver. Step 15, taps the smartphone to the NFC receiver. And finally, in step 16, he sits down to eat the sandwich. Right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, the technology's here. Like, this is the future. This is, that's what I always dreamed of,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
That the future would be like.
Yeah.
So I just did some sleuthing and, you know, it's still around. Google Wallet.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's why Google has him on now on staff. Maybe yeah. They want him to fix that. They saw that example and they're like, yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah. Why don't we hire this guy? Yeah.
So he writes in sort of the no UI version of this is, you know, first of all, the shopper enters a store. Step two, he orders a sandwich. Step three, he sits down and eats a sandwich. So
and in the article, actually, he does give an example that, you know, this isn't just like a, you know, that should be the aim and, you know, we should work towards that. Like that actual 1, 2, 3 of ordering a sandwich and sitting down was actually done by, what is it, Square?
Or Square, no, yeah.
Yeah, Square, yeah. So, and they kind of did that through like, you know, geolocation and you have to do some setup beforehand, but then after that, it just sort of disappears. So yeah. These are stuff that actually you really can do. This yeah. isn't just stuff that is like, you know, the computer should know exactly what you want and immediately do it for you.
Yeah.
You know, these are attainable.
Yeah. So yeah, 3 steps versus 16 steps. This is the world we live in right now.
Yeah.
So principle 2 is leveraging computers instead of catering to them. And as he wrote in the article, no UI is about machines helping us instead of us adapting for computers. We did a show actually quite a while back on Nielsen's heuristics, and one of them was.
We did a series actually.
Yeah, a whole series, which you should go listen to after this. Which one of them is called The Match Between the System and the Real World. And I think this no UI principle sort of relates to this topic is that
mm-hmm.
we should be designing systems that leverage, you know, existing human behavior and match how people expect things to work rather than, you know, forcing people to learn, you know, a 16-step process to order and eat a sandwich, right? And so the whole idea is that no UI, the theory of no UI can help technology be more of a facilitator to things instead of being the gateway to even simple things like getting something to eat for lunch.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I was getting hungry just by step 5. I was like, started salivating, like, come on.
No, man, step 5, you're just unlocking your phone.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Or the waiting one, yeah. But, I mean, it is really interesting because, you know, with the skeuomorphism, you know, it was very much, you know, the visuals were pulling from the real world, but there was also a little bit happening just because of that. The way that we were designing back then was pulling from the real world so literally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There was still some benefit from that I think Apple extracted to get people acquainted with touch and things like that. So it was really useful.
Yeah.
And so you can still do that, you know, with, you know, modern interfaces, but you don't have to be exact, you know, so literal in the visual or what have you. There's still so much to draw from the real world that pretty much what do users expect to do when they interact? What are they used to doing? What is the natural inclination, and matching that has a lot of use, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, that makes, it makes a lot of sense. I think, I mean, I just sort of see that as good design, but yeah. But yeah.
I mean, it is good design.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what he's advocating for is, yeah. It's not that this is new, that it's just something that we're sort of moving away from.
Yeah. So the No UI Principle 3, he writes, is create a system that adapts for people. So normally when you get an app, especially the first time, you have to spend some time learning about how it works and what the app can do. In tech lingo, we usually call this onboarding, which we did another show on, which you should also listen to. But instead of forcing people through some sort of onboarding process, what if we could design some system that learns how you prefer to interact with things and adapts itself to that? So rather than the user having to learn or relearn how an app works or how something functions, they can just do what sort of feels natural to them, and the app can learn about that and sort of react appropriately. In his essay that we'll link to, he cites the Nest thermostat as one of the examples. To quote the article, he says, "The Nest studies you. It tracks you when you wake up, what temperatures you prefer over the course of the day, and the Nest works hard to eliminate the need for its own UI by learning about you."
Have you ever used one of those before?
Yeah, we have them all over the offices at work.
Yeah, they're really cool. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where you're like, wow, this is like something that is really, yeah, working hard to understand. And then sort of, it's one of those things that you install, you use, and then sort of starts fading and fading and fading.
Yeah.
And you only interact with it once in a blue moon.
Yeah. And so that's the whole thing, right? Like by tracking your behavior, the Nest learns what sort of preferences you have. And over time, you end up, as you said, like you just don't use it, but it's still responding to what you need. And it's actually through this sort of adaptation process that it gets better and better at providing you the things that you need, rather than having you like interact with it so that you tell it physically and explicitly like what temperatures and things you need.
Yeah, so this is a question I have for you. Like, what do you think about this? So, okay. You know, we work so hard. Like, I would even say that there's been the general movement in product design, almost like growth hacking, to really be heavy on engagement.
Yeah.
How much are people using our app?
Yeah.
You know, are they opening up our app, you know, once a day, once a week, you know, three times a day? Like every VP of, I don't know, product is like dream is to have 18 or like 100 opens a day. They spend all like 24 hours a day in, you know, in their app. And like, that's their goal, right? And this is sort of like almost like turning that on its head.
Yeah.
Like, so what do you think about that? Like, does that work for, you know, every business model, or like should, who does this work for? Who doesn't this work for?
Yeah. Well, I would say the part of the problem is when you talk about engagement, I think a lot of the time people pay attention to the wrong information, right? So
I think we also have a show on that, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about engagement in terms of like page views and open rates on emails and stuff like that, like, and that's the only way that you understand it, then I think that's a pretty limited understanding of what engagement is and how people engage with things.
Right.
Because, for example, like I am fully engaged with things like Lyft and Uber, but I don't use it every day, right? And it's not like...
You don't go check your stats and
chat
with your friends on there and...
Exactly, right?
Do everything.
And so like, what is it?
That's what a lot of apps do, right? Like they...
Like what is it? What does engagement mean in this sort of conceptual reality for me, right? Like it's not that I dislike the product or I'm anti using it every day. It's just that
I feel like that's exactly what I'm getting at is like I really think it's about value, right? Like because like Uber provides you high value.
Yeah.
Whether or not you open the app every day, you extract, it's a huge part of your life. I mean, it's like for a lot of people, that's their mode of transportation, you know, 80% of the time. And it's a heavy part of their life, but they not necessarily engage with it that often. Only but every time they're moving around the city or they're going to and from an airport, they're using Uber.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting thing, and I totally agree with that. That I think a lot of people are really stuck on this, like, these engagement metrics that are sort of the wrong metrics to look at, and it really should be around, like, how are we tracking and how are we providing value.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, you know, something like if we go back to the food example, which may just because I'm hungry, you know, a shopper enters the store, orders a sandwich, sits down.
Yeah.
So on the previous, you know, 16, you know, step example, there's a lot more happening here. Like, the metrics would be higher here. You know, they open the app, you know, so we have one more app open. There's some time spent in app,
right.
A couple clicks, you know, different things like that. So maybe like page views or something, you know, so. But when I would ask maybe a user, like, which one would you want to do? Obviously, you know, I don't have to take out my phone. I just, like, order and it goes on my bill. I'm happy. I don't have to think about any of those things.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really difficult thing to sort of shift your mind towards to say, okay, because it's not as easily trackable. You might say, like, we've had, you know, 1,000 orders, which is way more valuable than we've had this many clicks and we've had this, you know,
right.
The value is the order.
Yeah.
Picking the right metrics is such a big part of this. Like, I mean, it's just, I mean, even just in design, what are you focused on? Are you focused on user-centric things or are you focused on business-centric things? And usually when you're user-centric and then you sort of put the business layer on top of that, you're so much more successful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think if we go back to the 16-step example, right? If you're measuring engagement based on how many times somebody opens this app and swipes through the app to, like, do something in it, like, in a lot of ways, like, that worldview of engagement is actually quite primitive. Like, this is what people were doing maybe 10 years ago.
Primitive. I like that. Just imagine, like, cavemen on their computers, like, cavemen growth hackers, like, just out there, just, like, I don't know, page views.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, like, maybe helpful at some point just to look at it, just to know, like, okay, it's been open this many times, but like, yeah, I mean, it's a fairly primitive way of thinking about engagement, and I don't think that sort of philosophy on it should continue on. Personally, because as we said, like, there's so many ways that technology can serve people and keep them engaged without them actually using it,
right?
Which is, like, a very weird way to think about how people work with products. But for example, like, you know, I work in the car space. A lot of the time, it's actually good if you're not, like, focused solely on looking at the screens in the car, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But just because you're not looking at it and swiping through it, does it mean you're not engaged? What if you're just listening to the music or whatever that's playing and you actually really are like, enjoying yourself driving the car?
You're enjoying the drive, like, you're feeling the power of, you know, the car and this and that.
Right.
Or, you know, you're calling someone. Yeah.
And if we measured purely based on, like, focus time, you know, gaze, if we had some way to, like, measure their gaze on the screen and, like, how many swipes they're doing, and if somebody was actually keeping track of this and saying, okay, button clicks are down this month, how do we, like, get the button clicks up in the car? You know, like, that would just be such a weird...
Yeah.
You know, like, it would be so weird. Like, why is that even a metric that you want, like, that is, like, valuable to measure, right?
Yeah, and I think we, as a... Not to get too philosophical here, but, you know, the societies who have all this technology, it's really... can be really draining. And you hear this a lot, like, a lot of fatigue.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, all these apps that are competing for your attention on a daily basis. And I mean, I remember before you could really manage your notifications as well. It's still kind of difficult, but I think Apple's done a lot of improvement and Google too. You know, like, there's just so many notifications here and there.
Yeah.
You get email. I mean, you know, tsunami of email notifications and reminders and things. And everything's trying to keep your attention. And it's, like, it's super draining, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's like that moment when you decide to delete an app.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? When you delete an app and you hit the X or whatever and it disappears and you just feel that relief. Like, that's when you realize, like, it was an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
You know? And you're just like, oh, wow. Like, what was I, like, why did I spend so much time in that stupid app?
Yeah.
Like, it was just such, like, a drain.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's really sort of because, like, everything's sort of been shifted around where they're trying to get this engagement. They're trying to get this thing, but they're not really providing value. They're just sort of, like, occupying your mind space.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's super draining. I think users, now that we've ourselves maybe have matured, I think it's also like, for a while, I think that was really big, the whole engagement thing, because you could just sort of like capture people's minds for a while and really profit off that. But I think now that maybe the technology has matured a little bit, user base has matured a little bit, we're all sort of sick and tired of all that.
Yeah.
That I think it's maybe now the no UI thing can be even a stronger pull for a lot of, you know, when you have like looking for a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
The no UI route is a lot more, I don't know, it's more probably going to be a lot more lucrative, I would think.
Yeah. I mean,
because, you know, if I have that versus something else, I'm totally going to ditch the one that's trying to get my attention all the time and just lets me drive, or just drives me, or just, mm-hmm. you know, does the thing it's supposed to do and does it really, really well.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of talking about the next point already. So why is any of this no UI stuff important? We sort of talked about it already. It brings us to the whole point of what user experience design is, I think. If we really are talking about user experience design as how somebody experiences a product, then we really should look at this as a way to reshape our thinking around how we design products. We just talked about it, like engagement, for example, is one of those things where, I don't know, maybe there are products where you really need some like hard quantifiable metrics, like page views or whatever. But I think we have to really think about that and like understand more broadly what the user is actually trying to accomplish to help us understand what it means to engage with the product. And is there maybe, you know, some no UI solutions that actually helps them accomplish that better and have a better experience with our products?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting. It definitely gets you more broadly when you're thinking of solutions. I think it's really important to take yourself out of this whole, you know, screen-based world and say, well, is there another way we can do this? Is there another way we can provide this value?
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people, I think maybe a lot of designers, if I can sort of channel them right now, are thinking, you know, well, how can I apply this at work?
Yeah.
So what, I don't know, what would you say to that? That's sort of something that I'm thinking about right now.
I think it goes back to some fundamental things, like, you know, these principles.
Because like for you, you work on cars, so like you have a direct application here. Yeah, we don't need as much screens and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and then like maybe the, you know, the app idea for the ordering. Yeah, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But then what about if you're like a e-commerce website? Like, how do you embrace no UI?
Yeah, that's pretty tricky, I would say. But I think what I was going to say was, I think it goes back to kind of the fundamental things of like user-centered design. I mean, the principles that we just talked about, they're not earth-shatteringly new, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and he says that at the top of his article too.
I think it's about studying what the user is trying to do, understanding their behavior and how they would shop for things. And, you know, you could even use like real world analogs for studying shopping behavior, like go to a Target store and watch what people do.
Right.
Spend
yeah.
an hour just like wandering around looking at people. I mean, you might be kicked out for being a creep, but
you can be a secret shopper.
You know, buy things and go through the shopping cart experience and think about how like technology actually enhances that, for example. Right. So I think there are plenty of things that still can be done to improve on the online shopping model. You know, like for example, you know, we talked about the 16 step process for buying a sandwich versus the 3-step. So what if instead of like, you know, signing into an account, somehow your computer authenticates you for you, so when you go to Amazon you don't have to always like enter your information all the time.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and you're just sort of, you just click and buy and you're done.
Yeah, exactly. The one click, the dangerous one click button on Amazon.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can see how effective that is. They've sort of removed yeah. that whole process and they just made it, you know, instant value. Yeah, I can agree with that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think really if you kind of go through the principles, you can apply that directly to your job. So like principle UI number one is eliminate interfaces to embrace natural processes, which you just described is try and see what are the natural inclinations people have. Like, oh, people like to collect things and yeah. do it this way, and then that's how we should create our shopping carts. We shouldn't have to make them go through all these like, well, did you want this? Did you want this? Did you want that? Yeah. Did you want five of those or just yeah. one of those? And like, you know, that's not something that people do. Usually they just want the one and things like that. Yeah. So really making it like super, super simple. And then number two was leverage computers instead of catering to them, and sort of matching the system to the real world is sort of under that. Let's see, how would we apply that one to, you know, again, that back to the e-commerce example?
Which one?
Leveraging computers instead of catering to them. So I guess, I guess I would say, like, my example would be, you know, instead of having to learn some new shopping interface where you have to find all these different systems of organization, yeah. You know, where you have, books, and then you have, like, motivational inspiration books. And you go down, like, all the way to, like, the, like, super specific category before you can find your book. Instead, you know, so what's natural? Oh, I just want to, like, type it into the search or what have you.
Yeah.
And so with, like, autocomplete searches and things like that, and sort of doing the work of, like, categorization, you can, like Amazon, again, back to Amazon's example, is they sort of done that work for you. You just sort of put in what you're looking for, and they do a lot of guesswork and show it to you instantly.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what feels natural too. You just want to, like, can I just tell you what I want?
Yeah.
You know, so, like, when you do go into a store, you can walk up to the front desk and be like, where is the X? And then they'll just show you, rather than you going to every single aisle and looking at every single row until you find it.
Yeah.
And then number three is create a system that adapts for people.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe the more you buy things, the more it kind of learns what you like. And so it kind of, it's like, wow, this person's never looked at a book in their life. Maybe we should stop recommending books and put in the grills and the toasters and things like that. I don't know if you can tell that there's pizza waiting in the next room for me. So I'm getting super hungry. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think it is super applicable. Yeah. You know, it's not necessarily the fact that, you know, it's going to be this instant thing in the real world, actual real world, but you can actually do a lot of things that sort of remove a lot of the UI out of the way and just move the value up front.
Should we talk about the counter example, the next article?
Yeah, I mean, not everybody is fully on board with this, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So we have another article, which we'll put in the show notes, by a guy named Scott Berkin. He's an author and speaker on lots of different things like creativity, philosophy, culture, and he actually wrote a big rebuttal. So basically, to summarize his position, is he says, you know, he advocates designing for what the customer needs rather than approaching every design task as this sort of no UI problem. He likes to refer to the no UI theory as this sort of Platonic ideal that is basically unobtainable. One of his big examples is airplane cockpits. So airplane cockpits are, like, I'm sure you guys have seen them. They're just, like, you know, flooded with all kinds of controls and...
Yeah, most of our listeners, they're pilots on the side.
Yeah. I think we've nailed the designer pilot demographic. Yeah,
that's our niche.
But yeah, like, airplane cockpits have all kinds of controls and levers and buttons and little gauges and all kinds of things. And he writes that, you know, people may die if it takes, you know, 12 clicks to dig down into some sort of menu tree. So, like, having all of that functionality at the very first level is actually critical to how a pilot operates an airplane. And so he sort of advocates using, you know, traditional design, user-centered design methods to study users. You know, who are you designing for? What do they know? What do they need to do? What situations are important? Will they ever be in situations we can't predict? You know, how important is it to design for when the design fails? And so he likes to talk about basically just debunking the whole no UI thing, saying, like, you know, we really should just design what people need rather than try to achieve this thing that basically can't be achieved.
Yeah. Our thoughts on that. It's really interesting. I mean, well, first, the article's name is No UI Debate is Rubbish.
Yeah.
So he's like an angry, I don't know if he's British, but seems like a very, that's the most angry I've ever seen a British person.
Yeah.
To call something rubbish. I do remember someone being on a call with someone who's from England, and they're like, oh, sorry, my computer's rubbish. Like, please excuse my language. Oh. And I was just like, okay. So I don't think it's too different. I agree with you. Like, you wrote here in the notes that you think they're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I think, you know, Scott here is a lot like, was exactly my first reaction when you sent me the article.
Yeah.
Was sort of like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. Like, you should just do good design, and good design, if you follow the right process, is going to lead you to whatever the right, you know, solution is.
Yeah.
But I think, like, kind of over the course of, like, what we just explained previously, like, we sort of unpacked it. That's not exactly just like there should be no interfaces ever,
right,
and everything should know what you want. Because, like, if you boil down his example of the airplane cockpit, ideally, a pilot gets in the plane, says where he wants to go, and he arrives. Yeah. Like, and he arrives safely, right? Like, that's essentially, like, if we could build the perfect system, that's exactly what it should be, right? And I think that's his point, is, like, let's aim for that, you know? Like, let's not just be stuck in, well, this is how it's always been done. And that's sort of what, you know, a lot of things are starting, like, I mean, a lot of cockpits are, right? They, for the most part, they are computerized, and they sort of just take off and land, and it's when things go wrong or they need to make adjustments that they really actually do stuff. So, I mean, it's interesting that he picked that example.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the examples in his article are a little bit somewhat off, not off topic, but, like, they weren't quite appropriate, I thought. But the point is...
Examples are always tricky like that.
I mean, the point is after I read through it, I was like, well, in some ways, they're kind of talking about the same thing, just, like, in a slightly different perspective, right? Like, they're both advocating that we do the right thing for the user, which is interesting, right? But I think they just have a different message. The no UI stuff, it's like, well, we don't always need to design a screen for things, design a GUI for things. Whereas I think in the other article, he's saying, like, well, don't throw out a GUI if that's what the user actually needs, right?
But I mean, that's true, right? That's true. But I don't think the no UI article and book was really saying that you should throw out all interfaces. I think it's just the fact that that's always the go-to solution, and it doesn't need to be. And there's a no UI solution, and also those principles can be applied to UIs, really. I mean, it's just, it's the interface part, you know, like, what's the quote? You know, the best interface is no interface. You know, it should just sort of happen. And interface happens when you need to do something and there's something in between that.
And usually it's like, especially in the book that you're writing, there's a bunch of scenarios where, like, there's interfaces that are actually causing harm and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, imagine the no UI scenario for some of those products.
I mean, that's a great example. I mean, like, a lot of times that stuff can hurt us. Like, you know, in the example, like, medical example, a lot of times, you know, they can spend now, actually, even right now, they spend a lot more time in front of their computer than they really do with patients. And that there's a lot of benefits, but there's also a lot of negatives, and if the design's done wrong, it could be a huge negative. So like, I think the ideal is, you know, in that scenario would definitely be where the nurse comes in and does a few things, and all those things are getting tracked and charted, and it may be fed to her, like, what needs to happen. And but it's not like taking up the nurse's time where they need to spend to stay late after work. A lot of people stay late after work just to, like, finish their notes about their visits, and they're probably not very good if they're later. So I think it's a really big problem, and I think the no UI solution is, like, perfect for those real world technology interactions. Like, I think that's, like, its sweet spot. And then I think for the ones that are, you know, definitely like a SaaS product or something like that, that's on a computer and it sort of just sort of lives there in the virtual world, you can still apply a lot of those things, but in a little bit more, you know, abstracted way.
Well, cool.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to glean from it. And I think it's really cool. And it was sort of cool seeing, like, personally, like, through our conversation, I kind of went from, like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think I understand it, you know? To really, like, if you go down and just pause for a second and understand what they're saying, and, you know, I think the no UI part, just the word no UI sort of throws you off in the beginning, and then you sort of come full circle and be like, oh, it's not about no UI. It's about the least amount of interfaces possible. And I think that, to me, is what the core value of his ideas are.
I mean, how do we reduce, you know, the need for someone to interact with a screen in order to get the things done that they want to achieve?
Can we provide a huge amount of value without having them to be tapping around on a screen? Can we still provide that value? And I think one thing that's interesting, just a real quick note that kind of popped in my head, is, you know, we always talk about keep or delete when we do our reviews of apps and things like that. So we have some show formats where we talk about design principles. Sometimes we'll discuss ideas like this. And sometimes we'll review apps, like we just did Pokemon Go in our previous episode. So in one episode, I remember we talked about how you can delete, how, you know, certain apps get deleted after a day or something like that. Like, most apps get deleted after one day. I forget what the number was, but maybe we can go dig it up. But I think that the less you're, like, constantly, you know, tugging at their sweater, I'm like, mom, you know, the more, you know, that you're just actually providing silently providing value. I think the more you're, or the less likely you are to get the boot and get canceled and get deleted. And so that might be another interesting thing to look at is like, wonder what the numbers are. Like if you had two apps and one was constantly nagging, trying to get people's attention, are they going to use that more? Are they going to get more value out of it? Or is it if they're just going the no UI route and just trying to provide value automatically in the background,
yeah,
you know, which one's going to get more revenue off of per customer off of that? That'd be really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what it is, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's probably part of it too.
Yeah.
Well, that was really fun. That was like a really fun discussion. I think in design, you know, there's a lot of like principles that just never change and never really challenge. Just sort of like we have to remind ourselves and figure out how to apply it. But this was one that was really interesting, I think, sort of unpacking it and kind of making us step back a little bit.
Well, especially for designers, right? Who, you know,
our
job is to make screens, really, to be talking about like, hold on, like, let's not make a screen for this for once. you know, like that's...
We're on a computer clicking around a screen to make screens.
Like, what do you mean? I don't open Sketch right now? Is that what you're saying?
It's our life. Yeah. Screen within a screen.
But yeah, that's kind of what we thought. What do you guys think? It'd be cool to get some feedback from you. Let us know on Twitter. My handle is MachineHuman.
And I'm DesignUXUI. And you can also give your opinion of this podcast, segue, on iTunes. So we always really, really appreciate everyone who's takes the time to leave a review on iTunes because it really makes a big impact. Being able to read those is really encouraging. It also helps our rankings and allows more people to find us and listen to the podcast. So if you have some time, go ahead over there right now and leave us a review. And engage with us on Twitter. Let us know what you thought about the episode and what you think about No UI.
Yeah. Let's see. Did we get any new reviews?
But while he's looking at that, you can always go to designreviewpodcast.com to listen to all our episodes, to find the iTunes link, and see all the other stuff, find the show notes, the links we talked about, and et cetera, et cetera. Anything else we should talk about before we go?
The website? You can listen to this episode and all of our previous episodes. You can find them on our website. It's designreviewpodcast.com.
I just said that. But yeah, that's...
Oh, you did?
Yeah. That's good. People need to hear it twice because they're not going there. They're just like listening and doing this whole no UI thing where they just subscribe and it automatically shows up in their iTunes account and they just listen to it and then they enjoy it.
Yeah.
So,
in case you tuned it out, I'll say it again. It was designreviewpodcast.com.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it for the show. We also, if you have an idea for a show, if you have an article you want us to look at, or an app you want us to review the design of, you can go on our website and there's always a link there. Fill out a survey, let us know what you think of the show, and let us know some ideas for shows. So go check that out as well. All right, that's it for us.
Cool.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you next time.